Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. For more than 10 years, Jeremy Red Eagle has worked with Native American youth from both South and North Dakota, Minnesota, and Montana. He's a member of the Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate and is director of the Dakota Language Institute. He's also one of the speakers at this year's virtual Neutrino Day, and he's joining us today with more on the activities he's working on that teach life lessons this Neutrino Day. Jeremy Red Eagle, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So there are challenges and opportunities this Neutrino Day because things are virtual. Tell me a little bit about some of those adjustments and what your part in the week will be.
Yeah. So last year was the first year they had invited me to come out, and we had some hands-on activities with our traditional Dakota games. And this year, because of the virus, we weren't able to do that, but they decided to go ahead and go forward with hosting the Neutrino Days. So they had asked me to create some videos to be able to, for people to watch and to learn from. So that's what we did. I think we did about five different games that we created instructional videos for.
Wow. Tell me how long this has been part. Specifically, let's talk about language. Did you grow up speaking your language, or did you have to embrace it as a young person or as an adult? Tell me a little bit about that journey, if you would.
Okay, so no, I did not grow up speaking my language. I didn't even hear it that often growing up. But it's something that I have always wanted to do since I was young, and as I got older, of course, our language has become more and more into a dire situation. Right now, currently on the Sisseton Wahpeton, we have approximately 45 speakers out of 14,000 tribal members. So that's not very good percentage. So I actually, I grew up in Montana. But I'm enrolled here, so my family and I moved back here 6 years ago with the sole purpose of learning the language. And I didn't even know how I was going to do it. I just knew that there were still fluent speakers here, and there was some programs. Just by chance, the college, Sisseton Wahpeton College, happened to be brand new at their language program. So I joined that, and I was fortunate enough to work with a handful of fluent speakers. A few of them have now passed on. And I've spent the last 6 years just dedicating my life to learning the language and then teaching it. And back in January, the position for the director of the tribal program, the Dakota Language Institute, came open, and I applied for it and got it. So that's what I'm currently doing now.
For so many of us non-native people who have learned language, it's a very textbook experience. It's a sitting in a classroom and repeating words back and forth and learning about another culture. This is your birthright culture. How do you? How is language acquisition different and really more integrated than maybe an experience with language learning that I would have had?
So that's a really good question, because we have a couple different things that we deal with. And one of them is the trauma that our people have gone through over the last, 100 plus years. And so when our elders were taken away and put into boarding schools, different things happened. They all have different stories. They're not all the same, but in all, they were not brought up to speak the language. They were punished, or if they weren't punished, it was still not celebrated or encouraged. So a lot of our speakers that we, the handful we have left, they went through a lot, and years ago, they were really looked down upon. Even amongst our own people, it started to get to that point. So now one thing we've noticed is younger people, it really has taken a toll on our identity. So as a Dakota person, the language is, the essence of who we are. But if we don't know that, then, and I think that's where people are wanting to get back to that today. They're wanting to learn, but then we realize that there's all these things attached to it. And so it's actually a very complicated, difficult thing to do. And then the method in how you do it. So do you do it in a textbook classroom setting? I've been fortunate to where the first 4 or 5 years of my learning was exclusively sitting with fluent speakers, not learning from textbook. But that's also more challenging because the way in which they teach is different. So as an adult, it's good to learn grammar structure, it's good to learn all these things, but when you learn that way, you're not getting true conversation, you're not getting true expression and emotion and, you know, and how our elders talk. So to learn by sitting amongst them, you're learning so much, but it's also, it takes longer because they don't know how to explain grammatical makeup of the language for the most part.
Right.
So it's definitely a challenging thing. And then with that, we see all of these, the shame for us as younger generations of not knowing our language. And so if I go into a classroom to learn Spanish or to French or something else, there's nothing attached to that for me. So I probably don't care if I make a mistake or not, you know, but learning my language, sitting with elders, I've become self-conscious of that. I have, you know, kind of like a shame of not knowing what they're saying, the cultural appropriateness of things, you know, that are connected to it. So all of those things really do affect us as a people. And so in this process of language learning, there's also this healing that is taking place along with that.
Yeah. And to your point about trauma, for somebody who speaking a language might have, you know, deep physical and psychological abuse connections, it's a lot to overcome to ask that person to speak their language, because they are also, you know, the body remembers that trauma. There's a lot happening there. But does that also heal to sort of ask people to speak that language and to be open about it and to have it be something that a younger generation wants you to say, to be validated and affirmed? Is there healing? I guess my question is there a potential healing for the speaker, for the language speaker as well as for the language learner?
Without a doubt. From my experience, there's actually kind of a stigma in some of our communities that some people prefer not to learn from speakers because some of them can be harsh, you know. But with my experience here in our community, I think we're very fortunate in our community to have so many of our fluent speakers involved in what we're doing. And I've noticed that the handful that were, there was a few of them that were kind of harsh like that. But as you start to speak, as you start to learn, as you start to comprehend when they talk to you, things like that, I notice a change in them. And so they start to embrace that and they start to take ownership of being your teacher, being your instructor, being your mentor. And so I definitely believe that there is healing for them as well, without a doubt.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Jeremy Red Eagle. We're talking about language, but we're also talking about Neutrino Day because Jeremy is part of the virtual Neutrino Day, and you can find more information at neutrinoday.org. Jeremy, for basics, for people who are curious about tuning into these videos, tell us a little bit about the contents. What sort of activities are people going to learn when they find the videos on the website?
So the majority of the games that I created the videos on are team games or ball games, lacrosse, shinny, double ball. We have a hoop and arrow game. It was played by young men, kind of conditioned them to be warriors and hunters. Those are the majority of them. I think we have one video that we did on a dice game that they used the seeds from a wild plum and they would make dice, and it was a game that mostly women played a long time ago. And so, yeah, we just go through and kind of demonstrate them and talk about them, share a little bit of the history with those games. A lot of these games are not really played anymore in our communities. They're forgotten about. Even a lot of our elders may not have a lot of knowledge of them. We're talking pre-reservation, maybe early reservation at the most, that most of these games survive through, and then after that they kind of disappear, and now you have to do research, museums and old writings and different things like that. There is some knowledge still left out there with them, but not a lot.
We look forward to that. Anything new in your art and in the work that you're doing beyond Neutrino Day that you want to touch on real quick before we let you go, and then hopefully we'll have you back on the program in the future as well?
Yeah, we just received myself and two ladies that are a part of the language program at the Siston-Wapton College. We wrote a grant for the South Dakota Arts Council for doing the games. Or, you know, there's also the artistic part of creating them, you know, using things from nature mm-hmm. to make the implements that we use. And so we just received a grant from them to, over the next year, I'm going to kind of mentor them and learning more about these games, the culture, the history, but the art part of actually crafting and making these things. So that's kind of what we're doing right now.
I love it. All right, Jeremy Red Eagle, congratulations, and thank you so much for your time today.
Yes, thank you.